original before the chips. In other words, I was doing work in the chemical laboratories on silicon crystals, which...
Well, crystals ought to be very interesting to you. Okay,
yeah,
we'll accept that. I think it's also very interesting, too, if you notice one other thing, about the location of the finding of the crystal skulls, which is in Central America, and the location of the other major artifacts of our time, which is in the Middle East. That these two points of the globe are the only two points of the globe of which what you could call the crossroads of the two great land masses of Earth. The area east of the Mediterranean is the crossroads of the great landmass of Europe and Asia and Africa. And, of course, Central America is the crossroads of the great landmass of North and South America.
I agree with you. We have a theory about it, not only before we saw the skulls, and we still have a theory about it now. Dr. Brühl, who is the foremost authority and has written the most information on Atlantis, for instance, everybody's popping Atlantis these days. When I spoke to him and several other people a long time ago, they thought I was crazy because I said, you're looking in the wrong place for a place you're calling Atlantis, if there's even such a place by that name. You should be looking west out in the Pacific. See? And this year, he's starting his investigations in the Pacific because he has located some ancient maps and stuff that indicate that what he's been looking for the last so many years of his life is not in the Mediterranean and out in the Atlantic, but in the Pacific. I believe that the land masses moved from west to east.
Well, that could have been the so-called Lemuria, which was the earlier.
It could be Mu. Lemuria was a later date. Mu would have been before that. Pangaea and a few other places would have been long before that. And I believe that parts of, if you will, Central America or parts of South America were at one time connected with Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that as the land broke and what we saw in the skull, like we were looking down from a plane or something, because all of a sudden the skull, I was with it for 33 hours locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this entire thing go ahead of me. I didn't eat. I didn't drink.
How could you?
And I just sat there and watched this entire show. And I watched the Earth change four times. Now, in each skull, I watched something different. Like one skull, it only changed twice. Another skull, only three times. But it all changed the same. Like it all had the same information. That's number one. Number two, this young man that was just talking to us, he talks about a stone, which is a communicator, and a transformer or a transmitter. In the skull, we see, particularly it started with the Mayan skull, we see a person putting stones into the eyes of the skulls. And as they do, like moving pictures running very rapidly through the skull. So when you put it in the right eye, it seems to receive it. And when you put the stone in the left eye, it seems to transmit it out. So this is another thing. A lot of this will be in the book when it's finished. But the thing that is intriguing to me, And more so than anything else, is that everybody's trying to convince me that the skulls came from Tibet. And having been to the Orient, I've been in over 110 countries and spent a little time wandering around, so I know a little of what I speak. I have found no proof of any skulls anywhere, except in Lower Mexico, Central America, and Northern South America. It's the only place I've found any connection with the crystal skulls. Yet I hear all these other... I've seen skulls in other places where they take human skulls and they cover them with brass, or they take the skull plates, or they take and cover them with turquoise or malachite or something like that. I'm talking about a solid, coarse mass that's carved away the way you're not supposed to carve quartz.
We can't carve it.
You know, and it has all these optics in it. Frank Dolan said, and Larry Labar, Hewlett Packard, that when they did the electronic microscope photography work, they swear that there is two batteries in that skull, and they even photographed, and Frank Dolan supposedly had the photographs, and no one has known what's happened to Frank Dolan's work. He's written a book. Why it's never been published, I have no idea. I wish somebody would publish it so I can read it, because he won't tell anybody what's in the book.
Well, maybe we can get him on the air.
Yeah, well, you might. He's not that far up the line. He's at Santa Barbara. Above Santa Barbara there, and so forth and so on. But let me take this a little further.
Well, let me do one thing, because we're going to get in trouble if I don't.
I'm sorry.
We have to stop for a second, and we'll be back to this fascinating...
Nick on the Saturday night, we're talking to Nick Nesserino,
And we are also talking to Mary Grace. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, I'm glad to be on the program. It's very interesting.
Well, we're delighted.
Yes. You know, some time ago, a long time ago, I read this paper about the crystal skull. Mm-hmm. And I think it's this Martin... he spoke about the Mitchell skull.
That's the one we're talking about here.
Yes. And in it, he mentioned... some time ago, but I remember him saying he felt that it was the extra energy that was in it that precipitated the calamity of Atlantis.
Is she asking a question like that? That's hard to say.
Well, I wanted some elaboration on that.
Well, elaboration is, number one, the skull shows four times that the Earth was changed and went into turmoil, whereby people... began to flee the Earth. It seemed that, and you have to understand that never in any skull, all eight skulls, when we see people moving, they're moving east and south. They're never moving north, and they're never moving west.
East and south.
That's right. And if you understand the old manuscripts, you understand that energy moves west to east, contrary to what a lot of people teach today.
The way the Earth turns.
Then the other thing is that if there is Atlantis or whatever it was, let's just put it this way.
Yeah.
The world, civilizations, far exceeded what we have today. If we are to understand the buildings we were looking at and the construction that we looked at that were destroyed, that sunk. And what we saw was mountains become deserts or oceans. We saw deserts rise up and become mountains. We saw castles that were, let's say, in flatlands, all of a sudden on top of mountains at very high peaks. We saw where there was a desert that became an ocean. So many things happen. Trying to relate 30 or more hours to you is kind of hard.
Well, there are fossils that are on mountaintops.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not arguing with you. I've been to Central America, and I've been to South America, and I've been to many places where you can find fossils at 10 and 12,000 feet in the air with no trouble. But I can't honestly say to you that the skull precipitated the destruction of Atlantis. I don't believe that that's what happened. I believe Mother Nature got a little angry, and Mother Nature will clean up the Earth.
There's something else I wanted to ask about.
Mother Nature has a heck of a job in front of her, right?
Yes, and I think she's going to come about and do it again.
I wanted to ask about that. I go to the Braille Institute now and then, and I heard there was a man from the Satishan Society, and he mentioned the... extreme intelligence in the killer whale.
Mm-hmm.
And he said how they were located, how they found schools down there in the Gulf of Mexico and by the Bahamas.
Well,
and he said that they were so intelligent that their brain capacity was more than that of man, but they didn't have the hands. And he said that if there were anybody from outer space that wanted to contact Earth, why wouldn't they contact them? Or maybe in a binomial language or some other...
makes more sense than contacting man, it seems to me.
Well, let me make a point here. She doesn't know how good a point she made.
She does. She made a good one.
I want elaboration on it.
No, I will try and elaborate. The skulls emit sounds. They're clairaudio as well as they're clairsentence, affinity, noise. You get all these things out of the skulls. But clairaudio, we heard these sounds. And we heard them over and over and over. And we spent over 2 years looking for these sounds. And we found these sounds one day by accident listening to a whale tape.
Oh, no.
And a dolphin tape. Now, this was fine, except there was one specific sound that sent chills through our bodies, and I was able to repeat it at one hearing, only once. I was able to pick the sound up and actually, on perfect key, repeat the sound, and I never heard it again until roughly 8 weeks ago. And I was with some friends, and they were with a killer whale, and they were training the killer whale to do their tricks and stuff at Marine World. And the killer whale emitted this sound, and it literally froze me in my track, because it was the identical sound that we heard from the skull. And we're now having a tape and trying to get it on tape, and we have some other people who are doing some work with dolphins to get a certain sound there. Now, the moment we went to the dolphins... And the moment we went to the whale, and this will get you, Bill, is these things are making all kinds of noise. The moment we mentally tried to transmit the skull to the fish, they didn't make another sound for the rest of the day. And everybody, including the researchers, were simply startled. And I just sat there and meditated and tried to transmit the skull to them. And everything went silent. I mean, everything went silent. Where the dolphins went in their direction, they mics all over the place underwater. We got absolutely nothing. Absolutely, and for days they stayed silent. Hmm. Now, if that doesn't give me the idea that there's some connection.
You know, we'd like to take those sounds and put them on optophonics.
Yes.
And which is the true sound.
Right.
Which you cannot get recording any other way.
Well, they said those killer whales could make the sound in such a high frequency, it could turn man and boats and things to jelly.
Well, it almost turned me to jelly.
And that's how they swallow things. That's how they swallow things, these big things, because their throats are so small.
Well, I won't know how they swallow, but the sound literally stopped me cold. I froze. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. Every muscle in my body stopped.
And you got to remember that those whales are capable of communicating 4,000 or 5,000
miles absolutely
underwater. They have great troubles now because their perception is totally destroyed by the great ships that are running through the water,
absolutely,
and making all the noise and all the pollution in the oceans.
Absolutely.
The submarines.
And we also dump some other things in the ocean.
We have been known to put something other than...
Absolutely. We believe, number one, that the whales were in some way used as communicators.
You think they could turn around and destroy the ships?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think the whales are big enough to destroy a lot of boats or a lot
of
ships.
No, I mean with their high-frequency things.
Oh, that I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Well, their high frequencies are very interesting because they're also accompanied by low frequencies.
Yes, there is a frequency that you don't hear that will affect you.
Okay.
They're very good at emitting ELF. And when you start dealing in the very low Hertzian range, you start dealing with some problems.
Yes.
Okay, Mary Grace.
Now
very
I'm
good.
Freezing.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Nick Nicerino. It's Open Mind. Past the 10 o'clock mark on this Saturday night, it's Open Mind. And with me is Nick Nicerino. We're talking about the crystal skull, crystals, UFOs, and in this case, whales and dolphins. And how a thought projection of the crystal skull toward the whales and the dolphins causes them to cease their activity. Any idea why?
Well, I haven't the slightest idea why, but it disappointed me because I wanted to spend hours recording them, and the recording stopped. As a matter of fact, the dolphins stayed away from us, and for days afterwards, they wouldn't do anything. Now, we have some other people who are trying to make some tapes and see if we can reproduce the sounds they did that day. That sound actually stopped me in my tracks and froze me, and it took me several days to get over the sound. It just vibrated through me that much. And after 20-something years of searching for sound, to find it by accident is the way you find most things, it seems, was a frightening thing because I wasn't prepared with my tape recorders and with everything else to just catch it, you know. And I'm angry with me for not thinking it could have happened, knowing that it had to do with a whale, but never thinking of a killer whale,
mm-hmm,
particularly one in captivity.
That's a terrible thing to call that wonderful animal
killer whale. It is not called a killer whale except by us. By other people, it's called a whale killer because it eats other whales,
mm-hmm,
you see. And the word got changed around to where it became a killer whale. And that is not its true name. Its true name is whale killer. So people confuse a lot of things today that unfortunately don't have to be confused. But I think that there's a lot of connection between the sounds of whales and dolphins and porpoises and skulls. It took me a long time to figure that out. But if I have a skull and I play the porpoises or the dolphin sounds and mix them with the whale sounds, a lot of things happen to people. A lot of things.
I'm quite ready to hear all of those sounds. Next time you got to bring the sounds with you, Nick. However, from the whale killer, let us go to Swift Deer.
Oh, beautiful.
Hello, Swift Deer.
American Indian.
Hello.
How are you?
Very fine, thank you.
Glad to have you aboard.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the program. And I called because one of my medicine apprentices called me and told me what you were discussing on the program. And I'd like to identify myself first. Mm-hmm. I'm a Cherokee half-breed medicine man. I do quite a bit of traveling and lecturing and teaching. And I've done quite a bit of work with John Lilly and Artie Lang and quite a few other people. And I belong to a group that is called the Twisted Hairs Medicine Society. And it's an intertribal medicine society that goes back about 750,000 years.
Forever, yes.
And it has a connection to the crystal skulls that I think you might find very significant. I don't quite know where to begin with it, except to say that...
We'll just go with the flow, sir.
Just go.
All right. Well, to begin with, our elders say that there are 12 planets with human life in this particular universe, and we call them the 12 magical worlds. These are in old teachings that are kept down in Kivas, quite a ways underground, about 3.5 miles underground. And there they also have a thing that they call the Ark. And the Ark happens to be a full-size, totally clear, male amethyst crystal skull. Its jaw moves, and it's based on exactly the same thing that you see in the Mitchell Hedges skull. And along with it are 12 other skulls. I should say 11, because the Mitchell Hedges skull is actually one that is missing. And what happened is our elders say that they met on a planet which they call Osiria Kanwia in the Cherokee language, which was the fourth planet out from the dog star Sirius in the Canis Major constellation. And that they met there about pretty close to 1 million years ago by our time. And with them, they had taken the total collective unconscious knowledge, in today's modern language, of one planet, each planet, had brought a clear female-sized crystal skull. And that basically, the way they had worked it is that it is a holographic image computer. That if you know how to program into them, you can open the skull, and it's very much like you would do if you had a computer in your home. The large ones, called the singing skulls, or the talking skulls, all have movable jaws. And the people from each planet brought their collective knowledge encoded into these holographic image computers. You could call them the great Novi computers. In other words, they encompassed the total sum knowledge. They met on Osiria Kanwia, and they met in council. And the reason they met was because of what was happening here on what we call Ahitama, Grandmother Earth. And what they saw happening was that we were not at the stage of enlightenment, at the stage of movement and progress that the other planets were. They refer to us in our language as the planet of the children, which is what Ahitama means. And they decided to come here. They dreamed themselves here. They did not have to play around with spaceships, et cetera, et cetera. Because you dream yourself here when you pick a human body, according to the old twisted hair elders. And so they dreamed themselves here. When they arrived here, they had one alternative, basically. And that was, do we approach the inhabitants or do we not? They realized that they could not yet do that because they couldn't be accepted. When they came, they had no necessity of a human body. They appeared in what our people refer to as the luminous egg or cocoon form. So what they did is they built two huge crystal domes in the oceans. And they built one in what would now be the Pacific Ocean, which they refer to as the Blue Dome, or Sequan. And they built another one in the Pacific Ocean, or the Atlantic Ocean, which they called Auk, A-U-C. And then from these domes, they would periodically come out and visit and work with the different people and the different populations. This was prior to the building of Mu, Lemuria, Atlantis, and an old civilization called Mahilan. And those were the first four great civilizations, according to the elders in these records. By the way, they've said that they will reveal what I'm talking about to you sometime between August the 16th, 1987, and August the 16th, 1990.
Does this have anything to do with...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Excuse me there, Russ Swiftdeer. I know that there has been a lot of agitation and stirring among the tribes in Arizona about the revelation of new facts and prophecies.
It is indeed.
The old medicine men are coming together from all over the world.
And those are the twisted hair, sir.
And it doesn't bode well, in fact.
It doesn't because, well, if we take the story forward, you'll find that I can bring you up to date as to why the Mitchell Hedges skull is not with us, because it happens to be the skull that contains this planet's knowledge. And so this planet has not yet come into what we call the gathering together circle. We have not yet gotten over our differences between red, yellow, black, and white. And we haven't discovered that we're really rainbow people. that we're all red, yellow, black, and white inside. That is, we've got yellow in the marrow of our bones, white in our skeleton, black in the pupils of our eyes, and red blood. And when we realize that we've got red, yellow, black, and white inside, maybe we can start communicating regardless of the color outside and realize that things that are happening to our planet are happening to us, not to them. The Chernobyl disaster happened to us, not to them. And we've got to get those kind of things clear, and the elders know this. And they've got the knowledge that they're in these cleaning skulls, what we call the Ark. And those holographic computers, literally above your head, is what we commonly refer to as the halo, or the tenth chakra would be another word we'd use today. And basically, that's like your contact, your higher self. And what happens when you turn on a skull, when you activate it, is actually the words that we use, a holographic three-dimensional image, quite a bit more advanced than the holograms that you see that we're making and playing with today. Because the holograms we play with today have a very greenish, lime green color. The holograms that are used with the crystal skulls are not only three-dimensional in the sense of depth and width and height and so forth, but they're also very much like looking at a television set, but a television that would be in complete 360-degree spherical dimensionary. If you simply access the computer by turning it on, you will get the things that Nick has been talking about. That is, you'll get playback of different programs, very much like putting in a disc. And so you'll get back what is fed on that disc. Most frequently come back, as I'm sure Nick has experienced in working with the Mitchell Hedges Go, in very two-dimensional and sometimes three-dimensional feedback, both inside your mind and visually inside the cranium of the skull itself.
Swift Air?
Yes.
I am delighted that you called. Would you mind hanging on?
I most certainly would, sir.
Because I've got a little piece of business that I want to do here for the radio station and also for Mother Earth. May I?
You bet.
All right. I'll be right back. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind with Swift Air and Nick Nazareno. Saturday night, my name is Bill Jenkins. We want to take just a moment from our conversation with Nick Nazareno, and we have Swift Deer on the line talking about the crystal skulls and talking about the civilization that we are in and how it is not advanced and it's got great problems. It's in serious trouble. But there is an effort underway right now to do something called A Million Minutes for Peace. And I would like to invite each and every one of you to join us all at the Hollywood Bowl next Saturday, the 18th of October, from 2 until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Dennis Weaver and I will be there. There will be a lot of people there. We want the children there. For you to dedicate just a minute of your time in meditation and thought toward world peace. Now, as you heard Dr. Andrea Paharich explain to you and Tom Bearden explain to you, that a thought is something that is in the virtual state. It is energy. It is real. It is alive. It works. Particularly if it's in harmony with the nature, character, and personality of the Creator, of Mother Earth. Don't be so flippant to think that your thinking about world peace doesn't have great value. Particularly whenever you are aligned with millions of people around the globe. The Million Minutes for Peace is something that is sanctioned by the United Nations, by every government in the free world, some that are not in the free world, in fact, by people everywhere. It is the Million Minutes for Peace month in Los Angeles. It's asked for by Mayor Bradley, Governor Duke Majid, President Reagan. And I'm very proud to be, along with Dennis Weaver, on the stage at the Hollywood Bowl this coming Saturday afternoon, the 18th, 2 to 4 o'clock. It's free. Get there. And if you will, join me for a moment as we pledge a moment for world peace. The thoughts are important. Think them very deeply. Hang in.
You start with a dream, simple as it seems. That's how we got to the moon. And then you keep it in mind all of the time. And miracles really will happen. I know it's true. No matter what the odds are, if you just heart, we are a part of every being created. And if together we try, it's not to deny, our love will unite every nation. And with this love, we'll build a new foundation so that in peace. Just remember, 1 minute becomes an hour, 1 seedling becomes a flower, and 1 wish on a shining star can make all the difference. I've seen it happen. It all starts with me and
your thoughts do count. Don't ever think they don't. And if you really look at Mother Earth right now and you see it torn asunder, I think that we can contribute or attribute the asunder to which we have torn to the thoughts that we are thinking, as individuals, and certainly as nations. For a nation is nothing more than a macrocosm of each of us. If you can't have peace in your home, if you can't have peace with your spouse, with your children, with your neighbor, with those in your workplace, how as a nation can we have peace? Come join us at the Hollywood Bowl, 2 to 4. Dennis Weaver, myself, many others, and the children. The children are there from the Los Angeles Unified School District. It is free. Be of heart. I'm doing something for peace. I implore you to come and certainly to think, meditate, bring on world peace, which is peace not only for this planet, but for each and every one of us. Swift Deer, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's a great message.
Well, I am so delighted to be a part of it. I want to say one more thing, that the word is out that I was going to be down at, I am going to be down at Leisure World in Orange County Friday night. It isn't open to the public. If you're under 50 years old, you're a suspect. You
right.
know,
that's
after,
true.
After sunset down there. And they did ask me to ask all of you that have found out that it was going to be there. They just can't handle that situation, and they have a full house. Okay, so, but I would never deny myself the opportunity of being with those wonderful people. Nick had some questions for you, Swifter.
All right.
I understand, number one, not only have you taken some of the old skulls out from the word that passed.